You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up today at 6 on 1A Plus, it's the weekly news roundup with a look at indictments against fake electors in Michigan and a possible third-party presidential effort in the works. Those stories and more today at 6 on 1A Plus. Now, President Biden is out with a new change to student loan repayment plans. That comes after the U.S. Supreme Court last month overturned his previous attempt to eliminate around $400 billion in debt for more than 40 million Americans. The Biden administration says the Saving on Valuable Education, or SAVE, plan will lower monthly payments for people with student loan debt down to $0 in some cases. We're taking a look at the plan, how it works, who would be eligible, and we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you have student loans? How has the restarting of payments affected you? Were you in a little back and forth over the previous plan that got taken down by the U.S. Supreme Court? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Nick Hillman is a professor in the Department of Educational Leadership and Policy Analysis at UW-Madison. Nick, welcome back to Central Time.
Happy to be here, Rob. Thanks for the invitation.
Well, we last talked to you pretty much right after the U.S. Supreme Court took down that other Biden administration student loan debt forgiveness plan. This is pretty different, but for some people, it might accomplish something similar. Can you give us the broad strokes? What is this thing?
It is an income-driven repayment plan. And what that means is that monthly student loan payments will be connected to the amount of income that somebody who has loans earns. And so basically, it reduces your monthly payment, allows for some cancellation that comes sooner than some of the older plans. And the idea is that this will be done automatically for people who are currently repaying their loans in an income-driven repayment plan.
Right. So an income-driven repayment plan could mean, hey, while you're making less money now, you have lower payments, but you still have to pay the whole thing off eventually as your income goes up. You mentioned there is some forgiveness built into this. It's a little more complicated than, you know, waving a magic wand and taking a number off of your total debt. How does that part of it work?
That's right. So these income-driven plans require borrowers to make payments for 10 years, in some cases 20 or even 25 years. And so the older income-driven plans, those are called income contingent repayment, income-based repayment, and pay as you earn. These are very specific programs that have been created over time. Those programs all have a forgiveness of 20 or 25 years. If you're in those payments plans and you're making payments, eventually those loans will be canceled after several years. There are some ifs and contingencies here, but this new SAVE plan replaces one of them and says, okay, after 10 years, we're going to start forgiving certain debts.
Who is eligible for that kind of, you know, the lower rates of payment and that earlier forgiveness?
Well, that's the big question. So on one hand, we have folks who are currently repaying through one of these income-driven plans. They're going to automatically be moved over to the SAVE plan. So for many people, they don't have to do anything except for maybe recertify when you know they have to. And that old plan is called the revised pay-as-you-earn plan. So there's so much jargon and so much complexity to this. It's hard to kind of explain. But basically, you have one group of folks who will be kind of grandfathered in because they're already in a plan. Then the other group of folks who are not yet in a plan will have to apply. And when they do, they can be eligible for payments that are going to be tied to their income. And sometimes it could be $0 a month that you owe.
I want to be real practical here. Suppose somebody's listening, they have student loan debt. The payments were postponed during COVID. Under the Biden plan, they would have seen some of it forgiven. That's gone away now because of the Supreme Court. They aren't making a ton of money, so they think they might be eligible. What do they do? Do they go? They can't apply yet, but when this kicks in, how do they apply? What do we know about that? Or does it just happen?
You'll have to apply if you're not already in the system, basically. So when you apply, you go to the federal U.S. Department of Education's website. You make an application. You can do all this through your loan servicer. That loan servicer is a company that that's the one that you make your payments to every month. And between the parties, you'll be able to make your application and get into this repayment plan. And then you have to have undergraduate direct loans or graduate direct loans. And those are very specific terms that are federal loans. So if you, for example, borrowed from a bank or a credit union or some other private entity, those would not qualify. It has to be a federal direct loan.
Talking to Nick Hillman, professor in the Department of Educational Leadership and Policy Analysis at UW-Madison, looking at a new student loan debt repayment rule from the Biden administration that allows lower payments, sometimes as low as zero, and the potential for earlier forgiveness. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller. Pat is with us in Green Bay. Pat, hi.
Greetings. Thank you for taking my phone call and happy Friday. Okay, my son is a graduate of the UW system. He's got a master's and he's got a huge pile of student debt. My problem is when you buy a house or you buy a car, you take out a loan and you're expected to pay that money back. He took out a loan and he realizes that yes, he has to pay that money back. I'm sorry, I know this probably sounds mean, but I don't think that it's fair that they're gonna say, we'll let you go.
Pat, I gotcha. And Pat's not alone, Nick. Concerns about fairness, not just compared to other kinds of loans, but to someone who, you know, has already paid off a student loan or found other means to pay. That's been a concern with this talk of student loan debt forgiveness all along, right?
That's absolutely right. And there have been over the years, not just under the Biden administration, but under conservative and more liberal administrations over the years, there have been a lot of interest in public service loan forgiveness. So folks who go into public services like teaching or nurses or so on, or work with a nonprofit organization, these jobs typically don't pay a whole lot, but you need a college degree to work in those positions. There have been some carve outs over time for these loan forgiveness plans for people who are in the public sector. And so there are definitely politics here and issues of fairness. And there are also kind of like protected groups that policymakers have over time tried to benefit. And we see now in the current debates, it's not just about public service loan forgiveness. It's bigger than that now.
Thanks a lot for that call, Pat. With the public service loan forgiveness, a related story here. There's been reporting from NPR over the last bunch of years that people who probably should be eligible for that kind of debt forgiveness aren't getting it, largely because of red tape. The Biden administration also making a push to get more people who thought they were going to get debt forgiveness because of that public service you mentioned actually get it. What are you watching for there, Nick?
That's right. There are two parts to this. One, you're absolutely right. This public service loan forgiveness has gone through a lot of fixes over the past couple of years. And I looked up some data for the state of Wisconsin. And in Wisconsin, probably about a year and a half or 2 years ago, there have been almost 10,000 individual borrowers who have had their debts forgiven under this public service loan forgiveness plan. And so that's on one hand of the equation. That totals to about $600 some million. And on the other hand, you have some other cancellation that the Biden administration has been working on for students who have gone to a college and that college defrauded them. There are many colleges out there, too many, that promise a particular career path or they promise a particular experience and you don't get it. And in these cases, it's possible to have the college defraud students. And under certain circumstances, you can have your loans forgiven if you were defrauded. And so in Wisconsin, about 200 applications have been approved for this borrower defense cancellation, and that's another $41 million. There's been another recent fix that canceled even more. So there will be these targeted approaches that affect people in Wisconsin here and there.
Let's go back to our callers. Christine is with us in Eau Claire. Christine, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for having me on the program. Yes, I would have to say that I would disagree with the previous caller. It's one thing if you are able to finance your education with the subsidized federal loans. Typically, the interest rates is lower, and then you don't start paying interest until you get out of college. But those other loans that the interest rates are higher, and you start paying interest immediately, And then you pay interest on interest. You've heard those horrible stories about people who pay, are paying on their loans their whole lives and never get them paid off. I mean, part of the difficulty is that we are not investing in education as a state. We're 47 or 43 out of the 50 United States. I mean, it's really a crisis. I work in higher ed. I have for almost 20 years. And when you talk to students who are paying 9% interest, and this was at the time
when rates were lower. Christine, I gotcha. I want to give Nick a quick moment before you take a break. Nick, your thoughts on what Christine brought up?
Oh, totally right. Interest capitalization is a big problem with some of the existing income-driven repayment plans, and that has created payments to balloon and the debt to balloon for a lot of borrowers. And this new SAVE program is designed to stop that from happening. One of the features of this new SAVE program we haven't talked about yet is that it ends interest capitalization. So your loan will not continue to balloon if you're in this program.
Thanks for the call, Christine. Talking to Nick Hillman with UW-Madison, getting an update on student loans, repayments restarting, the latest on the Biden administration's SAVE plan. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, questions, or experiences. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Nick Hillman, professor of educational leadership and policy analysis at UW-Madison, looking at student loans and the Biden administration's latest attempts at offering some level of loan forgiveness. Back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Josh is with us in Minnesota. Josh, hi.
Yeah, good afternoon. I had a question. So my wife has a significant amount of student loans, and she was on a 30-year repayment plan. And then after that court ruling, it switched to a 10-year income-based plan. And I was wondering if I heard you right earlier that she may become eligible in the future to switch back to a 30-year repayment plan. And hers is specifically a public service plan for work at a hospital, if that is all adding up for you.
Josh, thanks a lot for the call. Nick, these are complicated things that you may not be able to give specific advice, but based on what you're seeing, what do you have for Josh?
Yeah, the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program has two criteria. Obviously, being in the public service, but you've got to make qualifying payments. You've got to make 120 of these qualifying payments. And one of those types of qualifying payments would be under a standard 10-year repayment plan. Well, if you make payments for 10 years, your loan's going to be gone anyway. So you kind of, the other side of this is the income-driven repayment plan. So for the caller, if anybody's interested in these public service loan forgiveness programs, they've got to be in one of these income-driven repayment plans to be able to benefit from it.
Thanks a lot for that call. I want to get into one part of this we haven't talked about yet, Nick, when it comes to student loan delinquency and default. I want to give a listen to President Biden introducing the plan and talking about that part of it.
Normally, this could lead borrowers to fall into delinquency and default. But without their financial security, it would hurt their financial security, and that's not good for them or the economy. That's why we're creating a temporary 12-month, what we're calling on-ramp repayment program. And now, this is not the same as a student loan pause. It's been in effect for the past 3 years. Monthly payments will be due. Bills will not go out, and interest will be accruing. And during this period, if you can pay your monthly bills, you should. But if you cannot, if you miss payments, this on-ramp will temporarily remove the threat of default or having your credit harm, which can hurt borrowers for years to come.
Okay, so this big pause ends. Here's this on-ramp. How are you seeing that work, Nick?
Well, it's really a necessity to turn this pause back on, to end the pause. There's going to be a lot of disruption. I think that this on-ramp is going to at least help smooth some of that out. It has one complication, though, for policymakers who are interested in accountability. One of the major federal accountability tools is measuring and also sanctioning colleges according to how well their former students repay their loans. And if too many students fall into default, colleges can be sanctioned for that. And so what this on-ramp does is it helps people, which is the priority, and it makes it more complicated for these existing federal policy and accountability tools to really have an impact, because This means that, you know, for the next 12 months and then even a year after that, we're not going to really see any delinquencies and default, which is a good thing, but it could be sort of hiding some of the underlying problems that we know exist in our higher education system.
What kind of numbers do we have, Nick, on how many people in Wisconsin are going to be affected by this this on-ramp concept?
Well, I don't have an exact number of people in Wisconsin who will be affected by it, but I do know this. There are about 700,000 total borrowers out there who will be affected one way or another. And that's about one in five adults or so. And they usually carry on average about $30,000 in student loan debt, sums up to about $22 billion. So it's a big, you know, student loans are a big issue in the state of Wisconsin and nationally. In this on-ramp, it's going to benefit a sizable share of folks. There are going to be folks who aren't going to really need the on-ramp, and there are some who will really need it. And that's what it's there for, is just to help kind of with that transition to make sure that there's some flexibility in the system so that that borrowers can get back on their feet and make those payments.
Talking to Nick Hillman about student loan debt, a new repayment plan option coming from the White House. Back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Angie is with us in Madison. Angie, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So this is kind of specific, but I am a postdoctoral fellow, and I don't know if your guest is familiar with this situation, but essentially the granting agency pays the fellowship, and so I don't have employee status at the university that I'm essentially working for. So I've lost now 36 months of qualifying public service loan forgiveness payments despite essentially working full-time for university because of my non-employee status. So I've contacted my elected officials, kind of let them know about this like weird negative loophole, but I was wondering if your guest has any organizations that are kind of actively working on this in mind that I can contact just to really raise awareness about this problem.
Interesting, Angie. Thanks for the call. Nick, it is pretty specific. Anything you're seeing from the Biden administration on this or that you know is out there working on this?
A couple of organizations do come to mind, but I'm not sure if they will address this specifically. But one is the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, the CFPB, a federal agency that is designed to just help address some of these issues. And another is a nonprofit organization that really sprung up over the recent years around debt cancellation, the Student Borrower Protection Center. And so possibly one of those organizations could not just help with this specific one, but anybody who's asked questions or who might have issues about their situations. It might be worth connecting with those groups.
Thanks a lot for that call. Woody joins us now in Green Bay. Woody, hi.
Yep. I feel that these people should not be forgiven a debt. Or how about the people that paid theirs off? Should they get a refund?
Woody, thanks a lot for the call. Again, getting back to, I think, the fairness issue, Nick, if someone has borrowed the same amount of money but paid it off, are they, in effect, being ripped off here?
You know, that's where this gets so politicized and understandably so. And it's not going to end with this Supreme Court decision. It's not going to end this election cycle. In fact, I would bet that the next election cycle, this whole debt cancellation is going to become a wedge issue. And so kind of buckle up for that, because it does speak to those issues of fairness. And at the same time, it speaks to the way that our states and our federal government support higher education or don't. Financially, there's a lot more burden on individuals to pay for college. And if we're expecting them to pay for college through student loans, our student loan system was basically designed in the 1960s and early 1970s, not for the issues that we're facing today. So there's sort of this clash of government, a clash of politics. And at the end of the day, it's affecting 44 million people. And so it's becoming just a really big issue.
Woody, thanks a lot for that call. Now, Nick, you're not a lawyer, but you dug deep into that Supreme Court decision that overturned the previous plan. Any hints as to whether this might be seen as more able to pass court muster than that other one?
That is the big question. In fact, I think one big hint is that already a group of senators and U.S. House members have put together a letter signed by 70 individuals. They're all Republicans who claim that the Department of Education and the Biden administration does not have authority to implement the SAVE program. And they've already invoked the Supreme Court decision, basically saying that the Department of Education has overstepped its authority, that if there were to be the kind of cancellation that the Biden administration has rolled out, then it has to have been legislated through congressional action. And so the question is whether congressional action is clear enough. And that's what we just saw with the Supreme Court decision. It wasn't clear enough. Here we go again. But in this case, I think it's probably a safer bet that this will pass and be able to proceed. But again, I'm not a lawyer. That's right. Just my two cents.
And Nick, just briefly, I asked you this last time too. Thoughts on, you know, making college more affordable in the first place so people don't rack up the debt in the first place?
You know, there are so many factors, but some big ones are, of course, tuition is expensive. And to keep tuition down at public institutions, that means that we have to have appropriations to cover that. So that's a big part. And it's been contributing to why students borrow, because college is more expensive in general. But it's not just tuition. It's also the cost of living, the housing and the food and other kind of necessities that it takes to be able to enroll in college and take time off of work if necessary, or care for childcare, you know. So all these things kind of add up, and those are things you're eligible to borrow student loans for. And so one of the big factors, I guess two of the big factors, are that college is expensive, and so are the non-tuition expenses, but also family incomes have been just zapped. There's been a cliff in terms of that kind of growth that we've seen over time. And so families are more constrained today than before in many cases. So you have a lot of things happening that all contribute to steady and growing demand for student loans.
Nick, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you for the invitation.
That's Nick Hillman, professor at the UW-Madison Department of Educational Leadership and Policy Analysis. We've been talking about the latest on student loans and President Biden's attempts to offer some loan forgiveness. Tomorrow here on Central Time, some federal health programs now require re-enrollment after a multi-year break. Find out who that affects and what you and loved ones need to know. That and more Monday here on Central Time.